The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Jenny Luca, CEO of the Children's Inn at NIH. Jenny Luca is a seasoned human service professional with more than 20 years of experience working in the nonprofit sector. Jenny's career began in Anchorage, Alaska, working for the Ark of Anchorage, an organization dedicated to serving individuals with disabilities. Since that time, her focus has primarily been on developing and managing family support programs in the community and healthcare settings. She is passionate about supporting families during significant stress and has been acknowledged for her compassion, dedication, and strategic leadership. Jenny has a bachelor's in child psychology from the University of Minnesota and a master's in social work with focus on policy from the Catholic University of America.
So, Jenny, I'm not sure that people are aware of the Children's Inn at NIH, unless they've had reason to use it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is?
The Children's Inn is a place like home. It's really a place of hope for families who travel from all over the world seeking life-saving treatments for their children. So these are children who are participating in clinical trials at the National Institutes of Health. They're kiddos who have exhausted most of their options for treatment in their home states and their home countries, and they're seeking really that last hope. So these are kids with rare cancers, rare diseases, rare disorders, and our job at the Children's Inn is to provide a safe place for them to stay free of charge with supportive services so that they can really focus on their child's health while they're at the NIH.
So this may be politically incorrect. I don't know, but it sounds a little bit like Ronald McDonald House.
It's a similar concept in that it's lodging. It's a much larger organization. It's completely focused on research. So the mission of the Children's Inn is really twofold. It's supporting those families, but it's helping to advance the medical research mission of the NIH. So the Children's Inn, the families, the NIH, we work together to bring new treatments, new cures to people all over the world.
Yet it's not actually a part of the government, right? It's not a government institution.
Probably our biggest challenge and our biggest misconception. But because we're located on a federal campus and because we have NIH in our name, which is a strength, NIH is, of course, the world's foremost biomedical research institution. It can be complicated, but we're responsible for raising almost $9 million a year to keep our doors open.
Jenny, we'll get back to the wonderful cause there at Children's Inn in a moment, but I'd like to take some time to talk about you. So I understand you grew up in Anchorage, Alaska. I read your family had a cabin outside of the city, and you grew up fishing, hiking, snail hunting, going to the mountains. So, okay, what is snail hunting? Because usually I run from them, but hey, unless they're in a French restaurant.
That's so funny. I think it's just I grew up in this the beautiful outdoors, and there is I think it should be snail catching, and so just walking around in the river, spending your time outdoors. When you live in Alaska, you have to love the wilderness, and that was my upbringing, which is of course so different from where I am now in Washington, D.C.
So how did growing up in Alaska, that kind of background, that kind of being with the earth, influence you, the person you are today?
I think it was the simplicity. I was just in Alaska last month, and again reminded of I think it taught me how to deal with chaos, being calm under pressure. It was really the people of Alaska, the state of Alaska. It's not easy to leave Alaska. You can't get in your car and drive to the beach. You have to fly to where you're going. So you spend a lot of time in Alaska. And I think just drawing on that beauty and that very, very calm upbringing is what's led to my ability to probably do the very complex job that I do right now at the Children's Inn.
Sounds like you had a wonderful community and family life. What made you want to leave the nest and go to college in the lower 48? I mean, why did you left Alaska?
I love that you said the lower 48. That's such an Alaska thing to say. I always knew that my wings would take me outside of Alaska. My mother is Scottish. She left Scotland and came to New York City. She was that young person who had the dream to go to New York City. So I think the seed was planted very early. I had several experiences in growing up, helping people, starting to get to know, helping professions. I had my brother was in a very serious accident when I was a very young teenager, which was my first exposure to hospital and healthcare and just how devastating it can be for a family when you have a sick child. And so I began to think about my future and was inspired by the nonprofit sector and knew that if I wanted to grow a career in leadership, I needed to leave Alaska.
So after college, you went to college in Minnesota, but then after college, you went back to Anchorage, I think, for your first job. So how did you get from there to D.C.? Sounds like you knew you wanted a change, but why D.C. and how did that all happen?
I had been to D.C. for a leadership program when I was in high school and caught the bug, really just was blown away by D.C., by the government, and sort of always registered that in my mind that if I had the opportunity to come back, I would. And I had a great manager at the Arc of Anchorage, actually, who said there's this incredible university called the Catholic University of America. It's one of the best social work programs in the country, especially for me. I wasn't interested in clinical social work. I was interested in community organizing and leadership and applied and jumped on the plane and landed in Washington, D.C., and I've been here ever since.
So your undergraduate degree, though, is in child psychology. So at that point, did you think you were going to become a child psychologist, or what were you thinking?
I did. I thought that was the path, perhaps, that I would take. But between college and graduate school, I went back home to Alaska. I worked for the ARC, but I volunteered for a hospice organization. And that is where I really started to become passionate about grief and loss. As a young person, I did that thing you're supposed to do. I asked for, an informational interview with the executive director of the hospice and was just wowed by her job and thought, I think that might be the job I want one day. And so that's when I changed course and decided to pursue a master's in social work, which is a degree that can lead you to various opportunities. And it was certainly the right direction for me.
So we'll talk a lot more about the inn, but you just said something. I saw a previous interview with you and somebody asked you, isn't it kind of depressing to work at NIH where, as you said, these children are coming and it's the last hope and it's, a typically a rare disease or cancer and, it's experimental treatment. And yet you talked about interviewing the director of a hospice. And you kind of get that same thought like, wow, wouldn't that be depressing to work at the end of many people's lives? But obviously there's something in that that appeals to you.
I think it's the hope. I think it's the compassion. It's certainly at the Children's Inn. You walk into the doors at the Children's Inn and what you feel is not anything depressing. What you feel is hope and joy and kids thriving, despite really serious illness. And the same with hospice. The families that are using hospice services know how it's going to end for sure. So what you're there to do is make the journey a little bit easier. And that's, I think, what I'm attracted to in both jobs.
Today in the studio, we have Jenny Luca, CEO of the Children's Inn at NIH. Coming up, we'll hear about Jenny's current work at the Children's Inn. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jenny Luca, CEO of the Children's Inn at NIH. Jenny, earlier in the prior segment, you talked about your brother and that he had a near life or a circumstance where your mother had to deal with a very sick child. Is that where you got your passion?
It certainly laid the foundation. And it's easy for me to relate to the families at the Children's Inn because of that very personal experience. I remember that like it was yesterday. I remember being home. I remember getting the phone call that he was at the hospital, and I remember being brought to meet my parents there. And they didn't think he was going to survive. So I was also in the room when my parents were forced to make these urgent decisions around surgery and what they would do if he didn't survive. And then, even more difficult, I was part of the 2 years of recovery. Once he was past sort of the critical stages and it looked like he was going to survive, he was in a coma for 2 weeks. I was part of the recovery, and it just completely destroyed the family dynamic. I was also a competitive figure skater, competitive to the point of being having to be at the rink every morning at 5:30. I had to stop because there was no way for my family to get me to those lessons and to get me to that practice. And we all needed to focus on my brother getting better. So he recovered. He's actually doing very well. He certainly still suffers from a traumatic brain injury. My family stayed intact. It's not what you see a lot when families have a sick child, but it is where I learned the importance of a supportive community and to not. It can be very isolating because while everybody else is making plans for the weekend, we're making plans about when to visit my brother in the hospital, where my parents are going to ship me off to make sure that I'm being cared for. And that's what the children at the Children's Inn and the families at the Inn go through. So yeah, I think it's what probably just laid the foundation and brought a greater understanding. And I think because of that personal experience, I knew that I could help.
You know, until you're gone through an experience like that and know that it's not an event, it's a journey, and that it affects every single family member in a very profound way. And certainly, you know, your families do the right thing by focusing on helping save the child's life, but the siblings get affected quite a bit. So you had to give up quite a bit if you were getting up at that age at 5:30 in the morning to go to a skating rink. Then you had to have a love of skating. So you had to give that up. Tell us about families and the dynamics and as a sibling, how does that affect the whole family?
Well, I think that's also why the mission of the Children's Inn is so important. That's exactly what our focus is. We try to take care of all the little things so that the families can really focus on the child's health. So you know, we didn't have a Children's Inn when my brother was in this accident and he was in the hospital and then he went to rehab. But for families who come to the Children's Inn, parents don't have to worry about their siblings. We have special programs for siblings. We have fun activities. We take them out into DC. We create opportunities for siblings to meet other siblings who have a child
Great.
That's sick, so they can make those connections. And then when they leave the Children's Inn and go back home, hopefully they've solidified those connections and been able to stay in touch. Programs for the caregivers, for the parents. We don't want families to think about where they're going to sleep, where they're going to eat, how they're going to get information. We want to take care of everything, and it works. And it also leads to the greater mission of the Inn and the NIH, meaning that families are then able to stay on clinical trials, and so scientists are able to complete their research. And then we know what happens then, right? Then those treatments get spread to people all over the world.
Wonderful.
Thousands of people are touched by what happens just down the street.
It's such wonderful.
Hundreds of thousands.
The Children's Inn is, 17 years old now, and you've been there for about 14. What a wonderful journey that must have been for you. How have you seen the Inn evolve? Any unexpected ways?
Yep. So the Children's Inn just celebrated its 26th birthday. We will be 27 in June. I will turn 14 in July. So I've been there for almost half of the life of the Children's Inn. And I like to say that I joined the Inn when it was sort of in adolescence. It was an organization that was growing and thriving, but was sort of trying to work through complications of a thriving organization. So the board was a founder's board. We needed to look towards more of a strategic board. And now 14 years later, I followed the founder of the organization. I've just started my third year as CEO. So I've been with the organization for 14 years, but I've just started my third year as CEO. And I followed the founder. So, we can probably talk even for 3 more hours about how challenging that is and the pressure of carrying on this organization. But now at 26 years old, I would say we are a mature adult organization that is thriving and doing a lot of good for children and families and research.
That is unbelievable to have a founder be there for so long. And there must have been such an imprint that he or she left on the organization. Has it been hard for you to kind of make your own mark or be held to that standard?
I had more fear leading up to the transition than I do now. And she was a founder, and she was the CEO, and she was also an amazing mentor and still an amazing mentor to me. So I think I was very lucky that I had a lot of support through the transition. I think it's more the pressure I put on myself to make sure that, you know, this incredible organization was handed to me, and I really have to make sure it doesn't fail. So I think it's more pressure I bring on myself. But yeah, it's just remembering to value the history and to make sure that I bring all those people in who had such an imprint on the birth of this organization and the life of the organization. I do shoulder a lot of pressure to make sure we continue to thrive. But we are, and no, I think it's, I'm so busy now, I rarely even think about, I knew that it wouldn't, I couldn't be her, and we're so different. Our leadership styles are so different anyway, that what I knew I needed to do was forge my own path and my own vision and carry the organization forward. And that's exactly what I've done.
Well, you guys do such wonderful work, and you've described it so well. But are there any particular stories of people or situations that just stand out in your mind as particularly memorable?
You meet so many families along the way that are on this journey. And I remember maybe 5 years into the organization, a young man, he was about 20 years old, he was from Canada, and he was in college and was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia. He had failed his options at home and came to the Children's Inn. And I remember that family, and he failed his first treatments at the NIH as well, and it was really not looking like he would survive his illness. And that family really invited us into the intimacy of what was going on, and it certainly had an impact on me. I was very touched by he was young, he had a fiance, she stood right by his side. And about 3 years into the treatment, the father was in an accident and died. And so it was another layer of just devastation on this family. And I remember being so just inspired by their perseverance. And he actually survived. They didn't think he would. He's gone on to get married. But that was a little bit defining for me. Certainly small children who just have these really yucky diseases and symptoms, and they're not able to experience childhood the way, you know, my own children do. That's difficult. But it's the stories of hope that I cling to most and remember. And it's pretty amazing to see how hopeful the families really are. And then we at the end just join them in that hope and carry it forward.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Jenny Luca, CEO of Children's Inn at NIH. And Jenny, you make my eyes just well up thinking about those. I've been there and seen these kids this is their hope, last hope, really, when they get to NIH. They've tried several things, and you're right. The inspiration from these families are just almost intoxicating in the sense that, you know, what they're going through, and that they're laying this foundation to find a path of health. So Jenny, I know, like that all charitable organizations, the Children's Inn relies on donations for funding. There's listeners out there, they'd like to understand how they can support the Children's Inn. Do you have any fundraisers coming up?
We do. We are in the final stages of planning our biggest fundraiser of the year, which is our Evening for Hope Gala. It happens on April 29th at the Ritz-Carlton in Tyson's Corner. We have a big goal to raise $1 million this year, and we have big plans for that million dollars at the Children's Inn. It's a spectacular evening. It's our fourth year. It brings people from government. It also brings people from various industries, from information technology to banking to construction. And you walk into that room, though, and it's everybody that's there that truly just has the passion for the mission of the Children's Inn. And it's a fun evening, but it's special. We always have a family that speaks and tells their story. And of course, there's never a dry eye in the house when you hear it right from the mouth, usually of the child that's in treatment. So we're really excited about that. And that's right. We rely on the generosity of our community to support, to keep our doors open. And there's a variety of ways for people to do that. We also have spots in the Marine Corps Marathon. So anybody that, you know, doesn't want to wait for a lottery spot, you can join the Children's Inn team and commit to raising a few dollars and have an assured spot. That's happening right now as well. Going to the childrensinn.org website, there is a variety of ways to actually volunteer and have a hands-on experience with the families as well, whether it's providing a dinner for families or lending your skills or having a fundraiser for the inn. There's many, many ways, and we really invite our community in to help us. We thrive really because of our community.
You know, there's such a competition around here for charities. How do you keep the charity and the mission front of mind to this community so that you can help make this wonderful place work?
I think the Children's Inn has a reputation not only, it's easy to what we say, get the Children's Inn bug. What we do is you said that you visited the Children's Inn. So you know that when you walk through the doors of the Children's Inn, you're blown away. It's an experience you don't forget. You're touched by seeing children play and have fun despite serious illness, these brave faces of parents, the compassion of the volunteers, the beauty of the space. So what we certainly do is invite people in. But it's also, I think, an organization that's worked very hard to entrust the public to steward our dollars well, to make sure that when you give to the Children's Inn, we show you how you're having an impact. We're very transparent. And through events like the gala, making sure that it's far reaching and that we send our message. We certainly have a lot of we've really used social media and interviews like this when we're invited to really talk about what we do. We just try to get our message out. And of course, families telling their stories is, I think, the best way to share the mission of the inn and people understand.
Jenny Luca, CEO of the Children's Inn at NIH. Coming up, we'll ask Jenny about leadership and mentors in her career. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jenny Luca, CEO of Children's Inn at NIH.
So Jenny, you began your work in nonprofits because of your passion for helping people. But as you climb the corporate ladder in a nonprofit, like any organization, your job becomes about as much or maybe even more so about the administration and fundraising and things like that. So do you like that aspect of the work? And what do you do to stay connected to the mission and the families that you guys serve?
I do love that part of the work. I think it's to be a leader is a gift. One of my favorite parts of my job is to grow other leaders within my organization. I remain very connected to growing and learning. I'm sure I will continue to educate myself about leadership and all the way until the day I retire. It's complex. You're right. I think a nonprofit organization in some ways is more complex than a company, because you have this this responsibility to the public, to steward dollars, to make sure that the organization is sustainable, and you're working with a board, very, very busy executives who are volunteering their time to help you strategically run this organization. And then, of course, I'm not a good leader if I'm not staying connected to the heart of the mission, which is the families. So I make it a point every day to walk out into the Children's Inn and to connect. And that comes pretty naturally to me. It's not hard for me to do that. It's where I want to be. Anytime I'm preparing for public speaking or a speech where I'm going to tell a family story, I spend some time with that family to really understand where they are. It's a job that from me is a great privilege to do. And I think when you feel privileged to do something, you want to get it right.
So virtually all of our guests, Jenny, at some point have a mentor or mentors in their career. Who have helped them along the way? Do you have any mentors that you can think of that helped you in your career?
My mentor is actually Kathy Russell, who was my predecessor at the Children's Inn. She was my direct supervisor and was really the one that worked with me on leadership. to prepare for a role, whether to prepare for a CEO role of a nonprofit, whether it was in the Children's Inn, at the Children's Inn, or outside of the Children's Inn. And her mentorship was critical to my ability to improve and to grow. She was someone who gave me direct feedback, even when it was hard to hear, and also just sort of calmed my fears. I mean, I remember, again, preparing for this job, looking at her, who had actually had CEO experience before and had been a hospital administrator, thinking, how in the world am I ever going to do this job? And, you know, I can't believe they're even considering me. But it was her that said, you know, you'll never be 100% ready for any job. So get 80% there and let the other 20% be a surprise and a growing experience and a challenge. I'm truly very grateful to her and still call her a lot when I have a challenge or a problem that I'm trying to solve at the end.
Well, you followed the founder. That's not intimidating.
I think I brought it on myself. It was intimidating. I remember thinking, those are really big shoes to fill. And she had grown the inn tremendously during her time as CEO. So she was a founder, went away, and then came back to be CEO for 10 years. And I think many of us look at leaders, and I would look at her, but the most inspirational and effective leaders, and you think, oh, they must never make mistakes. They must know everything. And what she was able to do for me was be really open and say, I don't always know what the answer is, but this is kind of how I figure out the answer. And she mentored me in that.
I love that advice that so many kids today think they need to have everything figured out. So how did you prepare yourself for, you know, that up 20%?
Well, I didn't. You know, I really sort of threw caution to the wind and decided, I think I'm 80% there and I'm just going to go with it. And I love what you just said to me, because I think actually there was a time early on in my career where I sort of feared failure and feared feedback. And I think as a lot of women do, I think as women, I don't know if it's society or we bring it on ourselves. I suspect we bring it on ourselves, but we think we need to be perfect at everything all the time. And that any kind of failure means that it's life crushing. And so I wish early on I'd thrown caution to the wind a little bit more. I think I was very careful not to make mistakes. And I was a little bit afraid to hear that I wasn't doing well. But once I opened myself to that feedback and strengthened that emotional intelligence muscle, of course, my career started on the path to where I am now. And now I've flipped. I mean, now I really seek. It's great when someone tells you you're doing well, but I really want to know what I'm not doing well and what I can do differently. And at the end, we say that too. Take risks. We celebrate our failures at the Children's Inn. We kind of call it the throw spaghetti at the wall test. And sometimes things work and sometimes they don't.
You know, I think your point is right on. There's lots of data that shows that if there are 5 requirements for a job, that women will think that they need to be able to meet all 5 in order to even go for the job. Whereas if a man meets 1, then he will go for it. So I'm going to take it in a little bit different direction. You mentioned figure skating and that you were a competitive figure skater, which you ended up having to give up. But competitive sports are one of those things that are often credited with helping to prepare and shape people, but traditionally men, for leadership positions, right? Because if you look at the Fortune, you know, 500 or Fortune 1000, mostly men are in the C-level positions, especially CEO, and often they have a background playing competitive sports. So did your background, your figure skating background, which can be super competitive, did that influence your leadership style or get you ready?
Absolutely. And figure skating is an individual sport, not a team sport, as you know. And so what figure skating did was, you know, I was competitive with myself. So I would sort of look around and see who I was up against. But I knew that I needed to land those jumps I needed to perfect some special part of figure skating and to win that gold medal. And in figure skating, only 3 people win a medal, and really you want the gold or the silver. The bronze never really felt that great for some reason. Yes, and I am a very competitive person by nature. You will, if you went to the Children's Inn and asked my team, they would say I'm the one. You know, whenever we do a team building activity, I'm the one that. It's not that I don't like to lose. It's just that I like to excel and I like to do really well. So, absolutely, and I believe that, and I think team sports and competitive sports, all those experiences. Is round out you as a person. And it's certainly, I think, I was very passionate about figure skating. So I think it's what helped me understand passion. And when you're passionate about something, you can get really good at it.
So Gigi mentioned earlier about men in the C-suite. And today in the Fortune 500, there's single digits for women in that C-suite in the Fortune 500. However, reverse for nonprofits, the majority of CEOs are women, and they're very successful women in these roles. Why do you think women are so successful in climbing the corporate ladder and in the role as the leader of these nonprofits versus corporate America?
Well, I think women, most women, and I hate to stereotype, but I think most women have this natural kind of helping part to us where I know this when I meet people who are interested in donating to the inn, and if I'm speaking to my conversation is different with a male donor and a female donor, and the females connect. When they make that connection, which is what happens in a nonprofit, you work in a nonprofit organization because of purpose and mission and doing good. And that's why you're there, because we know that in a nonprofit organization, I think this is sometimes the difference for why you see probably more females than males, is that the pay in a nonprofit organization is always going to be less than in a for-profit, that you are fulfilled certainly because you're getting a paycheck, but because you're doing good. And so I think for me as a leader in the nonprofit organization, I've been able to be successful certainly because of the people around me, but because I am so passionate about what I'm doing. I every single day I'm sitting at my desk or visiting with someone who wants to know about the Children's Inn. The children and the families are not too far from my mind or too far from my heart. It's so easy for me to speak to people about what I do, and it's so easy for me to want to do more for these families and more for the NIH.
Well, you certainly can feel your passion, so thank you for all the good work that you do.
Today in the studio, we have Jenny Luca, CEO of the Children's Inn at NIH. Coming up, we'll ask Jenny about life outside of the Children's Inn. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jenny Luca, CEO of Children's Inn at NIH. Jenny, I want to follow up on a question I asked you earlier. So as far as future for the Children's Inn, where do you want to shape or add additional programs in the future? Where do you think there's a need?
We recently piloted a program to increase the age of eligibility to stay at the Children's Inn. So for the first 25 years, you were eligible until you were 26 years old. And we've done a lot of research, and the research shows that there's not a lot of support out there for pediatric patients, which are still considered pediatric, between the age of 18 and 40. So we've just increased the age to 30, and that's the space where we want to expand our support. If you can imagine, there's a lot of support for young children. There's more support for seniors. But when you are in the prime of your life, making decisions around education and family and trying to have some fun, and you get sick, it's life-changing. And we at the Children's Inn think we can do more to support those young adult patients.
So when you talk about services for those young adults, what kinds of things? I mean, that's going to be a pretty drastic difference than the kind of services that you provide to a six-year-old or the family of a six-year-old. So what are some of the kind new services that you guys are thinking about offering?
It's helping those kids and those young adults continue to visualize a life past illness. So continue to help them set goals, whether it be college, we'll help them with college prep, whether it be How is their treatments going to impact their ability to have children or their sexuality or their relationships? We will bring in experts and connect them with people to help with that support. It's also for many of the children and young adults who come to the Children's Inn, they come with a rare disease. So they've actually been coming to the Children's Inn for some of them for many, many, many years. And they're not ready to transition into adult care yet. And so we want to help them with that transition, give them the confidence to maintain, to take care of themselves. Some of them will continue to have their illness for the rest of their lives. And so I think if we can provide confidence and programming and give them tangible tools to start to go back to school and learn how to, this new normal, learn to have their life learn how to cope with their life as it's changed, we will set them on the path to a future.
Yeah, to focus on the future. I can imagine that psychologically, it must be very different. I think little kids are just kind of by nature, not only more optimistic, but they kind of roll with the punches. But, you know, you think about adolescence and post-adolescence young adults, that's a difficult time anyway. You throw in a life-threatening illness, I could see that there could be, you know, real challenges with that.
That's right. We always say it's hard to be a teenager and it's really hard to be a sick teenager. One of the things we do at the Children's Inn, though, is provide opportunities for teenagers and young adults to connect with other teenagers and young adults. You can imagine that some of the diseases that these kids come to the Children's Inn with are disfiguring. They make it hard for them to participate in sports and activities. And so we create all those opportunities at the Children's Inn. But the best opportunity we create is connecting a teen with another teen who has their same illness, because these kids have really rare disorders where it's not, perhaps there's not even anybody else in their state who has that same disorder. So it's very meaningful to connect with somebody and to have somebody who truly understands at the deepest level what you're going through. And that's what we do at the Inn.
So let me shift the focus just a bit here. Now I'd love to talk about a little bit about your family. You have a young family, and so I'm sure they're quite busy. And so I have to ask you the dreaded work-life balance question. Yeah. I won't ask you how you gain work-life balance, because mostly I think the answer to that is I don't.
I don't. That's right.
But what strategies do you use to manage day-to-day?
Right. And I, you know, up to a few years ago, I did use the word balance. I tell people in my organization now, young people who are young parents as well, that we don't strive for balance. What I strive for is to be present. So when I'm at work, I'm present with my team, with the families, with the organization. And when I'm at home, I try to be present there. And I'm not always successful at it. You know, sometimes I'm at home and it's hard for me to put my phone down. I certainly have. I have two kids. I have a son who thinks my job is just fantastic. He wanted to know that what I was doing today. He wanted to know if he could listen to me on the radio. And then I have a 7-year-old daughter who I get home and says, you know, everybody else's mommy picks them up at the bus. Why don't you? And so that's really hard. And that's when certainly you're pulled in different directions. But I try to stay the course. I know for me that being a working mom makes me the best mom. I know that. It doesn't mean that every day is easy. But my strategy, of course, is to try to be as present as I possibly can and enjoy both roles.
How does spending your days with family struggling with the health crisis influence your parenting style?
Well, you certainly, you know, the old cliche, you don't sweat the small stuff. You know, sometimes my most difficult days is what summer camps am I going to enroll my children in? I've learned that that's not important when you're trying to save your child's life. So, again, I think it's just this appreciation for having a healthy child, but not taking it for granted as well. And sharing the stories with my family. My kids know what I do. They come to the Children's Inn. They participate. Sometimes they even play with, they have opportunities to play with the other kids. And I think that's been eye-opening for them and has helped to almost give them a sensitivity and an understanding for the kids that come to their schools. Or if there's a child that's sick at their school, they get it. And I think they naturally want to help them. It's the Children's Inn has had a big impact on my life. In fact, I wasn't a mother. I wasn't even married when I first started at the Children's Inn. So I've really grown up there, and my family has grown up there as well.
So speaking of life balance, I know that when you're in a role like yours, most of your work comes after hours if you're trying to find donations, going to networking, going to events in the evening. I've heard a lot of leaders of nonprofits say that their professional life and their personal life become merged. And you talked about how your family, it's a family job. Is that true for, how do you keep them separate, though? You talked about how you put them together, but also how do you unplug from, you know, this very serious mission that you have? Clearly, you have a ton of passion about it, but how do you manage to unplug and then focus on that soccer game?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say the soccer game. One of the best ways for me to unplug and one of my most favorite things to do is to watch my kids play sports or enjoy their activities. And yes, the job of running a nonprofit organization is complex. I certainly throw myself in and give it all I've got. But I make a point, and I remember when I started as CEO sharing with my team that I'm supportive of I want to hear people telling me that they're turning their computer off and they're going to do something fun or they're going to their child's game. So I block time on my calendar. With my daughter who tells me I don't pick her up at the bus, I make sure I schedule a few times in her classroom and I stick to it. I don't let anybody take that time away on my calendar. For me, being at home and being with my family and being with my dog and my friends and just the normalcy of it all is enough unplugging for me. But I certainly will share. The Children's Inn is never far from my mind. I mean, I've just started my third year. I have so many plans and so much excitement for the future of this organization. I think my kids help to fuel that.
So what advice would you give if there were a young person starting out who had a passion around a particular nonprofit's mission? What advice would you give them in terms of how to have a career like yours, what to study in school or how to get started?
What worked for me was those informational interviews very on, sort of dabbling in volunteer work and getting to know the power and the impact of nonprofit organizations and paying attention to where do you feel that fire in your belly? And then make it known. You know, I made it known to mentors and managers along the way that I wanted to one day lead a nonprofit organization or have a very important, impactful role. That was broad. And I think for young people also, it's, but at the same time, don't be too calculating. I think also just sort of take on every opportunity you can with enthusiasm. And do climb the ladder, by the way. I think right now I'm watching the generation after me, the millennial generation, who I adore. I think they're passionate and they have these amazing ideas. But one of the things I've learned about them, and I have conversations with them every day, is they kind of want to speed up the process. They want to go from having an entry-level job to perhaps being an executive director in a very short period of time. And I would... First of all, that's really hard to do. But if I didn't get everything out of every single position that I was in, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I made a lot of mistakes along the way. So I think take your time, enjoy it, vary your positions, and get advice.
What three pieces of advice would you give your children to help them find the satisfaction and the happiness in life you have?
I do tell my children to listen to your gut. Really pay attention that I think passion and success is directly related to being present and aware and knowing when something's piquing your interest. So I guess that's number one. Be kind to everyone. I think that's so critically important because when you're kind, people pick up on that and want to naturally give you opportunities. And try really hard. That's something I tell them all the time as well, that, you know, try hard, be in control of your destiny because it's not going to happen. You need to actually drive the bus and don't wait for opportunities to come to you. Seek them out.
Today in the studio, we've been talking with Jenny Luca, CEO of the Children's Inn at NIH. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.